Definitely anthemic. I don't know what you think about it, but that's Wild Youth. We Are One, representing Ireland in this year's Eurovision Song Contest. Now, child and adolescent psychotherapist Dr. Coman Nocter joins us in studio. Good afternoon, Coman.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Thanks for coming in. Good to see you and your new glasses. They look good. They suit you.
Thank you.
We've loads to get through today, so we'll go straight to it. Hi, Coman. My daughter is in third year and has recently stood up for a friend who was being bullied by two others in the friend group, who subsequently left the group. She is now target of their abuse and doesn't want the school to help sort this out, as she's afraid of a backlash. Her class tutor says she has changed and even looks physically different recently and has less confidence. I would appreciate your advice. So she stood up for somebody, they left the group, and now the bullies are picking on her.
Yeah, and again, this is the biggest problem, I think, for to manage. It's the hardest one because, you know, the membership of these, the politics of these groups, especially in girls' groups, is if you take on the leadership, you know, you become a target yourself. And we tell these children all the time to be upstanding and everything else, but there's a consequence to being upstanding. In this case, this girl is being excluded. It sounds like she doesn't want parents to get involved and get into the school. And I can understand that because you're probably making it worse. But if you're seeing, and other people are seeing, a kind of detrimental impact on her well-being, you really have to do something. Now, what you do in this situation, because exclusion is so insipid, you know, you can't say, Ray, you have to play with so-and-so, you have to include somebody. But it is about probably letting the teachers and the people in the school know about the dynamic so that they can be aware of that. Now, sometimes there's a kind of tokenistic, we'll have a word with the class bit that doesn't really have any impact, but it is really to watch out. And you know, all the, again, the advice around find other friends, it's easier said than done when you're in that situation. For me, it's about maintaining her own self-esteem and self-worth and trying to protect that as much as you can, whether there's other external sources of that, whether she has a tribe outside or she has hobbies.
Sport, that sort of stuff, or something, yeah.
Something along those lines. These things tend to fizzle, but the impact of that, this is big, you know, in the longer term on self-worth and things like that. So it's something I would be keeping an eye on.
But there are many tools of exclusion now, aren't there, with social media?
There's so many, you know, yeah. And again, it's so difficult for parents to see your child being excluded. It's so difficult for the child themselves. And, you know, you don't want to make it worse, but it is something I wouldn't let drift, you know, because the longer term effects of this, you know, in terms of her own self-worth is a challenge.
So it's worth trying the school because it is school by school, isn't it?
It is.
And surely, and again, teachers and principals and welfare officers, or the equivalent, know about exclusion and group dynamics and all of those things. They've seen it before.
Oh, yeah, but they may need to know the specifics so that they can keep an eye out. You know, right. If there's 30 people in front of you, very hard to know who's not talking to who or who's excluding who. But maybe if you looked and saw that this girl was maybe sitting on her own at lunchtime, or there was something going on, or even comments during the class, or if she comments and somebody sniggers and things like that, being alert to it allows you to kind of manage it a little bit better. Okay. And you can do that subtly without, you know, calling the...
I suppose this is a parent who wants to respect the wishes of her, 14, 15-year-old daughter when she asks, don't go into the school because I'm afraid of a backlash.
Yeah. I think you can hear that and say, well, I'm afraid that something like this will get worse for you, and I'm going to give you what you need rather than what you want, and I promise I will be subtle, and I promise that I'll speak to the teachers in a way that doesn't, you know, that isn't going to have an impact on you, but I would prefer them to know what's going on than not know what's going on. And, you know, that'll allow her a little bit of trust that her parents can manage it, but persist.
I hope it works out. Okay. Coman, I was at a party with my son the other day in a play centre. There were about 20 other children there, most of them around 6 or 7 years old. One of the children he was playing with started behaving really badly and encouraging my son to do the same, which, being only 6, he did. The other mother sat there laughing at the carry-on that was happening. I was in shock. I didn't know what to do. I wanted to give out to both of them, but thought the other mother would take offence as she wasn't bothered with it. So I just sat there and did nothing. My son knew he was in the wrong, but I just let him get away with it because I was embarrassed to give out to him in public. Help. What can I do in these situations? Difficult.
It's a tricky one. And again, you know, it's one of those no-nos. You don't parent other people's children, but you're entitled to parent your own. In that situation, I would pull your own child aside, take them to the side and explain to you that your expectation of them is that they wouldn't do that.
He did it, Mammy. He was doing it.
Yeah, I understand that, and he can do what he wants. But, you know, you have to, we expect that different from you, and you're not allowed to do that and that. And again, that's not berating the other parent, is not, you know, but what you are saying is, you know, we have values within our family, and that's not something
well,
we
the implication
do.
For that other parent is that you don't.
perhaps, but again, I think you do that subtly. You know, yeah. I don't think you have to. I certainly wouldn't take on the two of them. I'm not sure that's the best idea. I think that causes friction. But you don't let things slide just because, you know, there's
so
other people
just,
around.
Come here. Want to have a word,
yeah,
sort of thing. Yeah.
Come on, you over, go yeah. to the toilet or something and yeah. say, look, what you did there wasn't on. I don't want to see that again. Yeah, that doesn't matter. You don't do that.
Okay, right. Coleman, our 8-year-old ups the antics at night time for bed. He will not go to sleep. He will be in and out of bed. He wants to get drinks, have his legs and arms checked for pains, which he doesn't have, wanting to check his school bag, really anything to get out of going to bed and sleep. We're at our wits' end. Can you advise? Just for context, bedtime is at 8 o'clock. As a working family, we are up each morning along with the children at 6:30.
Yeah, that's a good context because I was wondering, was it too early? You know, was he still wide awake? But that would sound about right. I mean, 8 o'clock, if you're up at 6:30, it's an early start. Again, I would, you know, it's a checklist before you go to bed. Are you thirsty? Have you any pains? Have you done that? So you're answering all the questions before that. If it's not about the thirst and it's not about the leg, you know, the pains, it's about something else. But again, a lot of that trouble around sleeping around that age is kind of a rite of passage. A lot of them have kind of worries about going asleep, worries about being on their own. The idea of permanency is starting to sink in. It's the age of reason.
It's a phase. We've spoken
it's
about
a phase,
this before.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you kind of, you know, you scaffold it and wean yourself back off it in terms of that dependency. But it's very developmentally normal to have that sort
and
of experience.
And in most cases, it will pass.
Oh, it 99% of them will pass. And again, it's just about not overindulging it. But, you know, little things like, you know, going through the checklist of having everything checked out beforehand, even a half an hour before bed, making sure that he's had all the drinks and everything else.
So
that
you can't come back to it.
So you're running out. You just change.
You preempt them.
Yeah, you're getting in ahead of it.
Yes.
But again, I would think a little bit of kind of unsettled before bed at that age is to be expected.
Okay.
And within 6 months, that should pass.
Now, I have a 4-year-old daughter who is incredibly shy. Her two older siblings are the complete opposite, which is very surprising. We held off at school last year to see if she would open up a bit more, but she still struggles around new people, even extended family at times. She's enrolled for this September, but I worry she'll really struggle in a new environment with children she doesn't know. She has a great personality at home with her two sisters, and I want her to be able to flourish over the next few years. How do I help without being too pushy?
Yeah, again, I think that this is probably something that's probably more prominent in recent years. And again, you have to take into context the last few years. She's 4. So
yes.
A lot of time
yeah.
at home.
We forget, don't we?
Yeah.
Like most of her life was COVID.
Yeah. And again, I think there's an important thing because there was no punctuation point of saying that's over now, you know, let's reflect on it. We just kind of carried on as normal. You know, there was no kind of point at where you could say, wow, that was tough. You know what I mean? And children have had no punctuation point either, you know, from that point of view of kind of saying...
We just tapered into the next phase of our life.
Just whatever you're having yourself and keep going, do you know what I mean? And I understand that, but I think it has been tricky and I don't think you can separate the environmental influences on a child like this who's anxious about going into school or starting school. The other thing is children are introverted and that's okay. You know, some children are not socially vibrant. We have an idea that children should be this way and that way. And I remember seeing a lad for about 6 sessions and he turned around to me and said, you're the only one that wants me to have friends. I'm actually fine on my own. And it was a really good point because he wasn't lonely for friendships.
Yes,
he was perfectly content. And I think we kind of have an idea that, you know, we have an idea.
You get
template.
A lot of that.
But again, this could be introversion. It could be shy. It could be social stuff. I mean, explore those different avenues. But there's only one way of getting out over the unfamiliar is to make it familiar. She has to get in there and see how she gets on. And it's the unknown, you know, in terms of if the children are nice to her and encourage her and welcome her, it's likely that she'll have a very positive experience. She is only 4, so the life experience is very limited at this point. But yeah, she's ready to go. Encourage her, support her, scaffold her, but practice with cousins and things like that as well. To just again, it's kind
prepare
of battle harden her a little bit from
train
that.
Her,
But that's a tough 2 years to have gone through socially to try and manage. That might be a little bit tricky.
Now we finish up with this one. This is a good one. They're all good, but this is one that I've never come across before in all the years of getting emails in. I would really appreciate some advice from your parenting expert on how to teach our 11-year-old the value of money. By chance, I caught her bringing in €40 in a purse in her school bag a couple of weeks ago. She'd been given some birthday money and I hadn't gotten around to putting it into her credit union account. It was on a high shelf, but she managed to get it, and I only found it because I was looking for a tissue in her bag on the way to school. When I asked her about it, why she had it, she said she just wanted to have money. Maybe she wanted to show it off or something, but when I tried to explain just how much money it was, she didn't seem to care. If I had brought a tenner into school back in the 80s, I would have received a clip around the ear. I would just love for her to know that she is very privileged to have 40 quid in the first place and that money is not a frivolous thing.
Oh. People are going, yeah, yeah, tell them that, the value of money. They don't know the value of money.
Brilliant question. Yeah. And I really worry about that. In our cashless society, children don't have a concept of money. You know, it is tap, you know, they don't even see.
Revolute me this, revolute me
so
that.
From the point of view of, you know, John goes to the shop with a euro and buys 3 apples for 20 cents. That's a kind of an obsolete way of teaching children about money now.
Yes,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it is invisible money. So, and for this child, I'm not entirely sure of the age here, but, you know, they wouldn't...
11.
She should know the difference between a 5 and a 20. Yeah. But from the point of view of if you haven't had that exposure to notes, coins, cash, then you're not going to do it. A good way to help her is to show her, if you had chores at home or did something, you know the value of... This is worth €2.
If you do the washing up, we'll give you €2.
Yeah, and
if you load the dishwasher or whatever. Yeah.
Tidy your bed, that might be a bigger, or do tidy out your room, might get a fiver. So you're given this kind of like for like idea of, and, I would oftentimes have to encourage my own children and saying, that worked hard for that. That's why I'm gone most of the week is to try and get money for that.
But is there something as well here, because we've about a minute to it, of the parent imposing their view of the world on their child, and it's a different world now?
Yeah, I mean, again, you know, bringing a tenner in the 80s is not the same as bringing a tenner in now. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So the idea of things being different. But again, we would have had so much more exposure to cash money, and been so much more aware. Now, 70s, 80s, you were acutely aware of everything, you know. But even you don't even see that much ads on the TV, but $2.99, $3.99, that sort of stuff is reserved for kind of Sunday newspapers. And children don't read Sunday newspapers.
Okay.
Children have Netflix streaming, that sort of stuff. So the idea of value and cost is completely lost to them. And that's where we as the adults in the room have to step in and actually do a little bit of education around that.
So reintroduce coinage and pounds and notes and
just the concept,
of
money and and what things cost and how to value them. Yeah.
And listen, when you sort that out, will you send me an email and tell me how you got on? Thanks for that. Coleman, thanks so much. And Coleman will be back in a few weeks. That's Coleman Nocter there. That's it from us. Cormac's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.